unpack your knives, and stay. Yes, stay. It's the Top Chef Judges Roundtable podcast here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. Hey, everybody. Mike Bloom here as we bring Top Chef Colorado to a Colorado close. It is finally happening. The finale has aired of Top Chef 15. Now I'm here to break it all down. But of course, I'm not alone. I am joined by a team, much like Adrian and Joe. We're joined by teams of people. First, the person who has been here with me every single week this season. She is as decadent as a perfectly done tweel, Haley Strong. Haley, how are you?
Mike, I've never done grits before. Are you sure you want me on the grits? I've never done grits before. Are you sure you want me to do this? I'm really... Why don't you just check this out? Can you just check this out for me? I just want to make sure.
It's like toast, but mushier. That's essentially how you can boil down grits.
Wow. Oh my God. That makes me never want to try grits.
Yeah, I'm assuming our other guest is blanching at how I just described grits, but we were so excited to bring her back to the podcast because she is definitely someone who knows her way around a Top Chef finale, considering she's 2 for 2 in finale appearances. Brooke Williamson, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Wait, 2 for 2 in finale appearances. I'm just curious to know what that means.
you've been in 2 finale. I was trying to remember. Were you in the Top Chef Duels finale too? I can't remember.
No, we don't have to talk about that though.
No, we won't talk about that one.
I have a question for you right off the top. Okay, so I assume that Joe has joined in your winners Facebook group. But does Joe also join in you and Kristen's Last Chance Kitchen then makes the winner Facebook groups too?
If we had Facebook groups, I would say probably that would be the case.
Something to consider.
I mean, we have a WhatsApp chat with the whole cast of season 14. And I believe that the whole cast of season 15 also has a WhatsApp chat that's just a constant rambling of ridiculousness. So I feel like maybe we should start a new WhatsApp chat.
I think you should.
I mean, I can totally imagine, especially Top Chef 15, because we've been talking all season about how close this cast was. I can only imagine if they're probably on a bunch of different apps, being able to converse with one another. Though I guess, you know, the app of just with the chat with just you and Kristen in it would be pretty lonely until Joe Flam came in. So I'm glad that the ranks are filling out a little bit more. But first off, we should say post-emptive spoiler alert. Congratulations to Joe Flam for winning Top Chef season 15. Adrian finishing as the runner up. We've got a big finale to break into. But first, bringing Brooke on here. You have made quite a number of appearances over the course of the season. You got to guest judge a quick fire, which happened to fall the morning after Bruce's child was born. And we also saw bits and pieces of you last week during the Food and Wine Classic. I would love to hear from you your experience, your side of things from both of those challenges.
Well, first of all, I will say that it is a lot more relaxing to be on the other side of things. lots of fun. You know, it's a very sort of surreal experience kind of being in that scenario. I still have a little bit of PTSD. So the second I see the crew and the cameras and all the craziness that goes on in production, I sort of, my heart starts pounding and I get really anxious. But I mean, how strange for me to be anxious, right?
Nope, you're talking to two people who get the anxiety no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
but it is really cool to sort of see the other side of it and to be able to taste the food as a normal human being. So that was a lot of fun.
How did you feel getting to do the quick fire right after Bruce, who you admitted the last time you were on here, you kind of helped get, you knew him before the show, you kind of helped him get into the show, to know that he was in such like a pivotal moment of his life, and especially that one moment where you come in and Bruce says, oh, you were here for me, as if he thought you were going to come visit him specifically because you heard that he had a child.
Right. Well, I had no idea that he had just had a child. I walked into that and he was literally like the only way I knew was because he told me when I walked into the house. So I had no idea. I felt a little bit bad because he was like on cloud 9, very excited. And he did think I was just there to like hug him and say congrats. And that was so not the case.
I know that you were also at the Food and Wine Classic last week. And I know we talked a little bit about the show, about how you had some thoughts about, you know, trying the food of the final three. Again, you've been in that position twice before. Did you have any thoughts that you wanted to express now that might have made its way onto the cutting room floor before?
I'll wait till we talk about those dishes. So I was at the Food and Wine Classic because that was part of my prize for winning Top Chef was to do a demo and some stuff at the Food and Wine Classic. I don't know if you listen to that intro of Top Chef every week anymore. But,
yeah, I was going to say, to be honest, Brooke, it sort of like becomes rote in your head eventually when you're like, okay, $125,000, yada, yada, yada. So yeah, I didn't put two and two together there.
We made a joke last week, though. We were like, are them cooking here at this Aspen Food and Wine Classic, is that their prize? Is that if they win? It's like, you already did it, actually.
No, I think it just happened to coincidentally coincide with the Food and Wine Classic when they were shooting. And it was kind of just a perfect storm of opportunities for Top Chef to do something there, especially since, Gail and Tom and, everybody's there for the Food and Wine Classic anyway. I think during my Charleston season, I believe that there was one week in between Charleston and the finale in Mexico. And the reason why we had to take that one specific week break was because that was the week of the Aspen Food and Wine Classic and all of the judges had to go to that. So there was no way we could have just gone straight into the finale. So we all, and I was actually supposed to do an event at Aspen Food and Wine and ended up not going because it would have been way too much to go from Charleston to Aspen to Mexico. So, so it just happened to work out perfectly with them being in Colorado. And so that's why I was there.
And I think everything works out. You had to miss out on the Food and Wine Classic during season 14, but then during season 15, you got the opportunity to go. So it's sort of closes a window but opens a door at the same time.
Exactly. Who knows? If I had gone to Aspen the year before, I would have been too exhausted to win in Mexico. So I wouldn't have ended up going anyway.
Everything happens for a reason. And now you get to be on the other side of things. Speaking of which, we obviously start this episode, actually, I think it seems like right from where we left off with Joe Sasto getting eliminated and the two of them celebrating. From your perspective, as someone who's been in their shoes before, is there a mentality switch that sort of goes off once you know that you've made the finals, or is it just sort of another leg in the competition, albeit it's the final leg?
I think you're just in this routine of competition. Of course, you generally don't have a quick fire. I think that finale episode, and you realize the sort of giganticness, I don't know what the right word is for that, the importance of this final challenge. Of course, it's a really big deal, but I don't think the mentality changes. I think when we were in Mexico, we really didn't have a chance to prepare a menu, whereas the finale that I was in with Kristen in LA, we had actually, I think a 3-month break between Alaska and the finale in LA. And they did tell us to plan a menu so that they could place orders for stuff that we wanted. Whereas in Mexico, we went from a challenge into the finale in an area where we kind of didn't know what to expect in terms of ingredients. And so there was no way to really plan a menu in Mexico, which I actually found to be fantastic for me. I feel like I do a lot better when I have to kind of think on my feet. So that worked out well.
Do you think that because we talked before about how season 15, you talked about sort of having those intermittent breaks sometimes, whether it's for the Food and Wine Classic or in terms of travel. And it seems like from what I've been hearing, because they've just been traveling through Colorado, there really wasn't a break throughout the course of the competition. What you just mentioned, do you think there's sort of an advantage to that of just sort of blowing right through and that like you don't have time to get in your head? You sort of just have to go off of your pure instincts and that can pay off?
Yeah, I mean, I think that competition mode is definitely a switch in your brain. And to have to turn that off for 3 months was really, really difficult, and then jump right back into it. I had a really hard time sort of getting back into that really focused competition mode after 3 months of coming home and, you know, living my daily life and doing paperwork, and I was busy and this and that. Having a week break was definitely a lot easier than a 3 month break. And I can only imagine not having a break at all would probably be better for me. To just sort of roll right through it. Once you have a chance to sort of take a breath and relax, you really get out of that intense competition mindset. So I think that I feel like that would have been a better scenario.
So we start the episode off here as the next day, you know, we get the impetus behind the challenge. It's self-explanatory, much like the intros that I've apparently been ignoring for the past several weeks. Cook the best meal of your life. I will say, we'll get to the knives pick in a bit, but when Padma and Tom are sort of introducing the challenges, my God, Haley, that panorama of the mountains was incredible.
It was so beautiful, but watching them go up in the gondolas made me a little nauseated because I do not do well with heights. So once we got up there, I was like, yes, this is fantastic and beautiful. But the ride up, I was a little queasy, not going to lie.
Oh my God. First of all, I did that ride up, even though you didn't see me take that ride up. But I think you guys know my fear of heights and enclosed spaces that I can't get out of. And that picture that they take at the Food and Wine Classic with all the chefs that becomes that like centerfold spread in Food and Wine magazine. So that's where that picture is taken, up at the top right there. And it's one of the big parties at Aspen Food and Wine Classic is held up there. And so I got on the gondola to go up to that area with Danny Meyer and a couple of other friends. We sat there and I looked across me and I was like, oh my God, I'm in a gondola with Danny Meyer, and I'm like sweating and freaking out to the top of this mountain. And he looked at me and he just started talking to me like nonstop. And I about halfway up, I looked at him and I was like, oh my God, I just realized you're trying to distract me. And he was like, yeah, I could tell you were terrified right now. And I was just trying to help you out. I was like, thank you so much. Oh. The nicest guy in the whole world.
That is wow. So awesome.
I mean, I'm like going up to this party with like champagne and caviar and a fancy dress and a glass of champagne already in my hand. And I was like on the verge of tears the whole way up. And it's like a 45-minute ride. It's never ending.
Wow. Good on Danny Meyer for trying to hold your attention for 45 minutes, too. Like, I could probably do that for like 5 minutes. I don't know if I could like get to a full 45-minute dialogue with somebody to keep them distracted long enough to sustain them over the course of a gondola ride.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have walked into that gondola without 4 glasses of champagne in my hand.
I think I might have drank everyone else's champagne in the gondola. So
be like, excuse me, sir, can I take the bottle with me, please, and thank you? Like,
thank you. Yeah, but no, you get up to the top there, and it's absolutely stunning. But you even feel that altitude change. It's that far up.
Mm-hmm. So before we even get to that fantastic view, and as Brooke is talking about, maybe more of a perilous ride up there, I know we get a couple of interesting things. And Haley, I want to ask you specifically, what did you think about the edit of this episode? Because, I mean, we get these things like Joe Flynn calling Tony Mantuano, who is like the partner of Spiaggia, the place that he's working, to sort of get himself mentally focused. We have Adrian talking about her parents. How does that sort of play into your overall thoughts on how this episode was edited?
So I was thinking about this earlier today because I was considering what Josh had said last week, that they wouldn't have put the line in the very first episode of Adrian saying, well, you know, I want to be the first Black female chef to win Top Chef. And Josh was saying, well, they wouldn't have put that in there if she doesn't win. And Mike, you, Josh, and I are so used to watching Survivor and, you know, looking into a formulaic edit that they often use in Survivor or, you know, The Bachelor, America's Next Top Model, whatever, all these like competition shows you watch, there's a very specific editing style that it's almost, you can be like, yeah, these people are going to make it far. This person isn't going to make it far at all because we haven't seen them. We haven't seen this story. They haven't said this. So I was pretty convinced that Adrian was going to win. And then even in this episode, we had some more of those moments. She reiterated, I want to be the first Black Top Chef to win. And she was talking about her mom. She was talking about her dad. And it really gave me the sense that this was Adrian's to win because she, you know, she had the story. It made sense. So it's very interesting that Top Chef has never really followed those editing ideals that we're so used to. So, it, you know, it's an interesting surprise kind of that Joe won. I was like, what? I really thought when Padma said Joe that she was going to say, you're not Top Chef. And I was like, ooh, that's double cruel, especially with what happened last week. So I was kind of surprised, I'm not going to lie. So the editing style, it kept me on my toes, I guess, which was good.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you guys pay a lot of attention to the edit. And
we do, yeah.
You do. And I feel like maybe that comes from obviously watching a lot of reality TV, but I feel like Top Chef is definitely a show that doesn't try to lead you in a direction in an obvious way. I don't know. I feel like it don't place a lot of emphasis on the edit, unless they're really, really trying to pull something out of nowhere. But I think that doesn't happen very often. And it's funny to hear you guys talk about the edit so much. I just feel like it doesn't really play a huge factor.
I completely agree with you there. And so, you know, that's something we've kind of discussed, like, oh, Top Chef doesn't follow this, but it's really hard for us to break that mentality of, you know, mm-hmm. not following what the edit is trying to tell us, because realistically, the edit from Top Chef isn't trying to tell us a specific story. They're trying to tell us the whole story.
Yeah, and that's what I've always kind of approached it with a grain of salt in a manner of speaking, just because, I mean, we've had winners in the past, like going all the way back to people like Hosea and even Kevin from the DC season of, like, not necessarily, like, if you watch things in episode one, you probably would not predict that either one of those guys would have won. And even going into the finale, you might have said, like, okay, I can understand why they're there, but it doesn't make sense from an overall arc perspective. But I mean, Top Chef is also a show that really prides yourself on what have you done for me lately? What's the last thing that you've done? And I think that was another thing as well, is that when we think less about that and more so about what's one person's story over the course of, you know, 14 episodes, which does happen. I mean, Brooke, I feel like your second season, especially, you had a very interesting overall arc, but that was sort of tied into your previous performances as well. So I think that was sort of what Josh and the rest of us were sort of hopping on, was this, okay, if this was mentioned in episode one, that means that it's got to happen in episode 14, when, as is obvious, you know, that was not the case here.
Well, I mean, there was an edit of me saying, or a snippet of me saying, there is like that theory that the person who wins the first quick fire ends up winning the whole show. But I think that actually is not a theory. I think it's the person who wins the first challenge ends up often winning the show. I don't know. I don't feel like there's an often or a theory or anything. I think it just happens. And I just happened to say that in an interview, and they, mm-hmm. you know, they used it because it was interesting maybe, but yeah, I think, you know, and they also don't lead you to say things. You know, we're real people who understand that this show will air anything that you say. So I think for the most part, I feel like most of the chefs are pretty careful about what they say, in terms of not saying things just because production wants you to. So. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not fed lines.
You just do the feeding. So let's get to the knife draw here, because we can definitely talk more about the edit stuff over the course of the episode. So Adrian picks Chris and Carrie for her team. Joe goes for the other Joe and Fatima. Haley, any surprises here in terms of the sous chef draw?
I thought Bruce would have been utilized by at least one of the teams, but I. Wait, was he? Am I losing?
No.
No. Okay, I was for a second. I was like, wait. But
why? My question is, why did you think that Bruce would be utilized?
Just because he was utilized last week.
I mean, he was kind of forced to. He was a sous chef.
Right. Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't know. I just expected with a guy with that much experience and, you know, great ideas, he would have been used. But I understand why you would want people who, you know, are really great line cooks too.
Yeah, I think that that's actually why he wasn't picked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, well, we saw that last week, right? When Adrian was cooking stuff with Bruce was very forthcoming about a lot of ideas that he had. And I think what Joe was looking for was somebody who would be able to, you know, fall in line and just say, give them marching orders. And he picked two, it seems like, devotees. I think Fatima is going to quip later that Joe Sasto is in love with Joe Flam, but Fatih is actually the number one president of the Joe Flam fan club.
I'm so glad we got one more episode of Fatima. Just like, she's so magical that I was so happy we got just a couple more confessionals from her.
I mean, she won that. And by the way, congratulations to Fatima for the fan favorite prize. Very, very well deserved. Brooke, were you surprised that any of the earlier chefs were not picked? I know that back in Charleston, you picked someone like Sam, for instance, who did not go very far, but definitely had some skills to him. Were you surprised that they ended up picking like the most recent four people eliminated, with the exception of Bruce?
No, I think you end up picking people that you know really well. You know, and I think that if you haven't had a chance to, you know, say someone like, I don't know, who was one of the chefs that got eliminated early on?
You could say, like, if Joe picked Tyler, like, would that be out of the ordinary?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
or like a Laura.
Actually became very close. But like, yeah, like a Laura, like, I feel like if you haven't spent a ton of time with someone or don't feel like you don't know them very well, it makes it more difficult to understand how they would act as your sous chef. I picked Sam because I knew he was super easygoing and talented. And I also felt like I knew Sam really well, just because I had known him from previous, previously watching his season. I feel like it's more of a, can I work really easily with this person? Because I know their skill set and I know their personality, than it is anything else. I specifically wanted to work with people that I just felt like I knew what to expect of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that, you know, Adrian sort of muses about that a bit, I feel like, when picking Carrie. You know, she says that she's a really positive person, and you sort of want someone to have that in stressful situations, especially when the stakes are so high.
Exactly.
So we get a little bit of menu planning here, slash some prep work on the first day. You know, Haley mentioned this before, but Adrian has given Carrie the job of making grits, which she is flustered out of her mind about. We learn a bit about, Joe learns a little bit about cheer wine. We all learn a little bit, I think, about this burnt wheat dough that has such an interesting color to it. Haley, had you ever heard about this type of dough beforehand?
Absolutely not. It was really cool to see how it came out and how everyone was super impressed about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So as the chefs get out of their first day of planning, again, we can sort of tie that into the actual dishes itself. After some last minute ricotta pressing, we get back into their place and surprise, Tom and Graham are cooking a meal for them. Brooke, I'm trying to remember, did you have in either one of your seasons any of these moments of the judges cooking for you, or having like sort of a last powwow before the finale?
In both seasons, yeah. So in Alaska, we came home to Emeril and Roy Choi cooking lunch for us.
After we had
gone up onto the glacier and had a quick fire on the glacier, which was unexpected. And then last season in Charleston, Padma the final four, Padma made dinner for us. We came home to her cooking. I've never had Tom cook for me. That would have been fun. We didn't get a whole lot of advice. It was more like, here, although, I think Roy Choi and Emeril gave us our challenge, and that was their way of introducing the challenge to us. So no, it was less advice and more like, here's another challenge. And then Padma was just like, let me make dinner for you.
Which is still must be very nice. Haley,
I know, fun, yeah.
And Haley, I know that you had reached out to me about how much you were loving Tom's glasses look while he was cooking.
Oh my gosh, I'm just such a fangirl of Tom's glasses. Like last season he had like these really cool frames, and earlier this season he was wearing like suave sunglasses, and now he's wearing like rimless glasses at the like tip of his nose and looking, I don't know, I'm just, he's such a silver fox to me. Gosh, I don't know why. He just does it for me.
I feel like so many people say that. I feel like that Tom has this like fan club of ladies who are super in him. It's really cute for me.
And he probably like feels like, you know, like your uncle. So you're like, ew, why are these people talking about my hot uncle?
Oh, I love Tom's harem. That sounds fantastic. I will say, I really like this scene. And Brooke, you sort of pointed out something that I feel like is very representative of this season. It's so interesting comparing this to last season, which obviously you had you guys who were all seasoned chefs in your own right and also been on the show. But this season, you were back to new chefs. And it feels like, especially down the line, it was very much like a mentor-mentee relationship between Tom and these chefs. You know, they cook and they sit down, and then, you know, we have this conversation between where Joe asks, you know, would you have done this before? And Tom says, well, you know, maybe if I was 26 and cooking in this Michelin star restaurant. You have Tom even putting some quips out there about how, you know, there's some bones in the fish. You can eliminate me if you want to. It lands much better than his attempt at a knock-knock joke later on in the episode. But it feels very warm. And Haley, I don't know if you feel the same way, but this season to me in particular feels like the judges had almost personal stakes in how a lot of these chefs were doing, especially down the line.
Yeah, I can get that. And especially we saw Tom be kind of disappointed in them at one point, being like, you can do better than this. Like, I need you to do better. And it was kind of like, ooh, Dad's mad at us. This season really just kind of felt like a warm blanket the entire way through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't feel that way. In my own season, I felt that way while watching this. Yes, I totally agree. That's not at all the sentiment I got during my finale.
But maybe it's because you were already in Mexico, so you didn't need a warm blanket. It was probably warm enough as it was.
Super warm.
So the next day, this ties back to, you know, Joe talking before with his partner, Tony Mantuano. We have, you know, we've been talking this whole time about Adrian being at La Bernardin. She gets to call Eric Repair to sort of get some last minute advice from him. And he gets to give her some advice about the tweel and how she'd be able to pull it off because she's really been failing at it during the prep day. Brooke, how did you feel about these people sort of taking the time to, you know, we talked the last time you were on about contacting loved ones. How did you feel about them sort of taking these last minutes to contact their mentors, the people that inspire them, in order just to get some last minute advice?
I thought it was interesting. I'm pretty sure it's not the phone call that they would have requested had they been able to call anyone. I feel like it was really sweet and cool to see, because they both did have mentors. They couldn't have done that on mine and Shirley's season, because we, you know, we both had our own restaurants. We didn't other people for like reassurance or advice. I feel like I would have called my husband and been like, wish me luck. But I guess he was already in Mexico anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this felt like it was in lieu of having family there at the finale, which I feel like is usually the case. It was interesting. I mean, I think it helped one element that turned out to be a great element for Adrian.
Yeah.
And, you know, for Joe, I think it was more of just like a friendly voice. But yeah, no, it was interesting. I wonder if, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It was just sort of an added little kind of cool thing to me.
Yeah, it totally reminded me, Haley, of the season 13 finale where, you know, you actually brought these people's mentors in person. And of course, they didn't work so well for Amar and Charlie Parker, but I think they benefited as well. You know, when Brooke and Shirley, you had your chef de cuisines there. So that was sort of like your own little touch of home.
Right.
But I thought it was like a nice touch, Haley, to have them be able to each reach out to somebody on the outside who can sort of give them some last minute confidence before they go in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I liked that the little moment where I didn't love when they brought the mentor in, especially because it caused for some really awkward moments in the one case.
Yeah.
I forgot about that until you mentioned it, that they were like on speaking terms at that point. And that kind of conflict just makes me anxious throughout the entire experience. So I liked them, you know, having a phone call and then we're kind of like, it was like, felt like passing the torch almost. And that was satisfying to me.
Yeah. And it's also speaking towards this, like, again, going back to these larger ideas of the season. I don't know if it's because, again, it's sort of a deviation from the returning chefs who have established careers that we saw last season, Brooke yourself included. But it feels like, especially the people who made it to the end, there was really a lot of growth arcs going on over the course of this season, especially your Adrians, your Joe Sastos, your Carries. You know, it feels like a lot of people really grew into their own, and that tied really nicely back into those arcs of Adrian has finally figured out who she is. Now she can reach out to somebody who helped make her who she is, and he can give her sort of confidence to carry on with her own style of cuisine.
Yeah, and I think that that's great for the show. I think that that's what Top Chef wants. I think that that's what makes Top Chef so special. And I think that that was lacking a little bit in last season. I remember in season 10 being asked in an interview, how do you feel like you've grown as a chef? It was like a constant question. And I remember constantly answering, saying, well, I don't know if I necessarily have grown as a chef, but I definitely feel like I could get on a helicopter again. or like, I'm not scared to get on a boat now. Or, you know, that was definitely more of like a personal growth for me. And I think that I feel like Top Chef is Top Chef because you want to see people grow as chefs. And that's really exciting and cool to see over the course of, you know, however many weeks you're watching the show and getting to know these people.
It's Top Chef, not Top Helicopter.
I don't think I was giving them what they wanted. But yeah, no, I think that that's definitely something that you got this season completely different from last season.
Well, let's get into these dishes themselves. And I figured let's go course by course. Let's pit these dishes against each other, much like the judges did, and give our thoughts on them. So we'll start with this first course here. Adrian puts out what Gail calls, I think, the best dish of the season, in her opinion. A spoon bread with sea urchin, a buttermilk dashi, ham, caviar, and the twill, which she pulls off. I also noticed that Adrian is a big fan of dashi, at least when she's found herself. Joe goes for a raw tuna with a veal demi aioli, some smoked wagyu powder, and capers. Joe is going for a very, like, take on the traditional Italian menu. He even puts in titles for the dishes, which I noticed a similar pattern, actually. I believe when you were competing against Shirley, Brooke, I believe Shirley also titled her dishes. So I like that sort of that's been carrying on from season to season. But Haley, between these two dishes, it seemed like Adrian was the victor. Did you agree with that?
Yes-ish. It's very hard to compare these two because they're so different and they both sound really delicious. So can I have a taste test? Then I can really see who won.
I don't think you can.
Brooke's the master of the taste test, though. So if there's anyone who would say it, it would be her.
I would have been really excited to try both of these dishes. I think visually and creatively, probably Adrian took it. But they did say that Joe's dish was perfectly balanced between acid and richness. And, you know, it sounded beautiful. It sounded like something I would totally make, you know, sort of a perfectly balanced dish to me, you know, is always a winner. But I think that they were definitely more impressed by Adrian's creativity here.
Yeah, I mean, I think the twill provided a really cool thing. It was almost like a magic trick back from when they had to do that, speaking of season 13, where I think it's, who is it, Graham, that compares it to, like, lifting up a lady's dress, which, Graham, there's enough of that going on in the culinary world. I don't know if we need to make that comparison.
Well, you know, he didn't know his audience at that point.
That's true. Nobody even cut out of the season at that point. But I really like the creativity behind Adrian's dish, and I love that Adrian swung for the fences, because I think going in, edit aside, I think Adrian is a very talented chef, but I think a lot of us might have been going in being like, okay, Adrian's done some interesting stuff, but she hasn't really done anything to knock it out of the park completely yet. And I was stunned getting to look at that dish, just the creativity and the visuals behind it, which is, you know, how we as viewers take it in through the senses. But I think Joe's use, and I think the judges highlighted this as well, of the fat powder is such a cool way to sort of bring that fatty element into it in a different textural way than you would initially think.
Totally. I actually watched the previous episode right before I watched the finale. So they're both kind of meshing together for me, but I was also, you know, I was at that tasting at the event that they did the episode before, and Adrian's dish with the corn pudding was actually my absolute favorite, hands down my favorite dish that day. I ended up going back into Adrian's line to get another serving of it, and then ended up having to leave. but that was, I mean, I think that Adrian, you know, at first glance from Adrian's performance during the season, I felt like maybe she was going really timid and under seasoning and this and that. But by the time she got to that, you know, down to three people, she was like on point with her seasoning and her creativity. And I think with her, when she swings for the fences, it definitely suits her well.
When you showed up in Aspen, were you surprised at who the final three were based on what you had when you were judging the Quickfire?
No, I didn't. I mean, honestly, it was such a like whirlwind of so many people for me. The only person I really knew was the only people I knew were Tanya and Bruce. And so I didn't really, I mean, I had met them really briefly and under really stressful circumstances. So I didn't really remember what I had eaten during that quick fire. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know what to expect when I walked into that tasting with the three people left and I saw Bruce. I actually thought Bruce was the chef, and not because he was the man, but because I knew he was in the final five or something, or five or six. And I figured that that was his dish. And I walked up to the booth and I said, "Congratulations, Bruce." And he was like, "Not me."
is that why you got back in line? Because you wanted to apologize to Adrian for screwing that up the first time?
I don't know that Adrian heard me, but I just assumed it was Bruce. I don't know why, because I didn't know Adrian. I knew Bruce, and I you know, I didn't know her. So I just naively assumed it was Bruce. And then I was like, oh my God, look at that. Okay, cool. And the food was so phenomenal, but that is definitely not a dish that Bruce would have made. So it made sense to me.
Yeah, not a pasta on the plate there. So you know that's not textbook Bruce. Well, speaking of pasta, let's move on to the second course here. So Joe puts out his tortellini, which is the aforementioned, you know, burnt wheat dough. I think he compares it to river rocks, which is an image that really sticks with Gail. Poor horse Gail in particular. I don't know what Gail and Nilu Mutamid from Food & Wine magazine were doing the previous day, but they were...
She was sick. Gail was sick. Yeah. I felt really bad for her. She was not feeling well.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least she was able to come and like give some really fantastic observations in pure Gail fashion. Whereas Adrian goes for this unconventional combination of octopus with grits and bringing back that chow chow, which we saw Chris do in the very beginning of the season. So I thought that was a nice way to sort of bring it full circle. Haley, what did you think of these two dishes?
I really loved the thought behind Adrian's, where it's like catfish and grits, like very Southern, but it was like elevated. It was like blackened octopus and squid ink grits. And that sounded really cool. I've never tried grits before, so I'm a little like, I would be a little nervous going into that. I feel like they're not a texture I love personally. And Joe's dish was just really cool. Like it was, you know, I feel like it wasn't like a super complicated dish, but it was very interesting. And the ingredients he used and the dough he used made it super, you know, a super compelling dish.
Mm-hmm. What'd you think, Brooke?
Yeah, so the octopus looked great. It did. I feel like after hearing comments that it read a little dry, I felt like it was less appetizing, because I feel like that, you know, unless there's a lot of grits and they're like super saucy, you know, I feel like octopus needs a sauce or a wet component. And And I hands down feel like I would have been gaga over Joe's pasta. So that pasta, like the and sort of broth that it was in, and it looked gorgeous. It sounded gorgeous. It sounded delicious. That's 100% the dish that I would have gone with. And I love octopus. So there's nothing about Adrian's dish that didn't sound good to me. It just, I think just the appeal of Joe's dish really kind of took me.
Yeah. I love octopus too, but I feel like I haven't had good octopus in quite some time, because I feel like every octopus that I've had has been very chewy, which I feel like is not a good thing necessarily. So I was a little trepidatious when she was going for that combination, but it seemed like, with the exception of the dryness that Tom pointed out, it seemed like it went pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, octopus, octopus, unless it's cooked for a very long time, has a toughness to it. It's a chewy animal unless you cook it to the point where it's soft. And I think you can sometimes take it to the point where it's too soft and it ends up being mealy. Which is actually a worse texture to me than the chewiness. So perfectly cooked octopus is definitely octopus is something to me that needs to be perfectly done. Yeah. And you don't see it very often. I'm also going to digress for a second and say, I feel like, and this is just coming from a place of unfairness. I feel like this finale, they had to cook for 9 people. The food ended up looking so spectacular because they had 2 days of prep and they had to cook for 9 people. And it made me so angry that I had to cook for like 60 people and had 1 day to get it all done. Like, I feel like I could have done so much more had I had 2 days and an eighth of the amount of people. It was so frustrating to watch and to listen to Tom say, I think this is some of the best food we've ever had in a finale. I was like, fuck you. Of course it is. Look at how much time they had and look at how many people they had to cook for. Like, screw you.
And they didn't contend with the heat of Mexico and like serving outside or like serving dishes live or whatever.
Yeah, I was gonna say you definitely have been put in some of the worst conditions for finales. I will say the live to tape finale being the worst part of it.
That live to tape finale was the worst freaking night of my life, and it was so frustrating. The format, the number of, I mean, talk about serving a lot of people. No, maybe that was 60 and Mexico was 30. I don't know, but it was a lot of people regardless. And it was really frustrating for me to watch. That's just my personal experience as I was screaming at the TV and my husband was like, you know what? Talk about it on the podcast. I don't want to hear about it.
We're always here for you, Brooke.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
We're here for any venting you may have. Though I love your sort of like, back in my day, we didn't cook for 9 people.
Yeah, so I'm done with that now, and let's talk about the best food we've ever seen on a finale.
Without a doubt, the best food that has ever been put on a Top Chef finale under no other circumstances. Let's move on to the back half here. We'll start with the third course, because this might not be the best food that's been put forth at a finale. Both of these meat courses don't do too well in the judges' eyes. So Adrian does this Cheerwine braised short rib with black eyed peas, and she tries to mimic that sort of black eyed peas smashed effect that doesn't really come off too well with a ham hock and some Cheerwine bone marrows bordelaise. And then Joe goes for a Mezzo de Colorado, a ribeye with these tastes of Colorado, this asparagus and this smoked bone marrow sauce. Hilly, what did you think about these dishes?
Like, I'm not super impressed with either of these, honestly. Like, short ribs just like aren't super my jam. Black eyed peas, like, it just, and that dish didn't sound like amazing. And in Joe's dish, the ribeye was overcooked, and the best part of the dish, apparently the asparagus, is something that I despise. I hate asparagus. That would be my least favorite part of the dish. Give me an overcooked steak over asparagus any day.
Well, yeah, I guess when Adrian worked on those black eyed peas, I had a feeling that tonight was not going to be a very good night for her, unfortunately.
We should start calling you Mike I Am.
I think that could definitely work. We'll see if that sticks, much like Adrian's Black Eyed Peas did. Brooke, what did you think about these two dishes?
I don't love Black Eyed Peas. So, I mean, I don't know. Neither of them were super exciting to me. I also feel like I'm curious to know that we feel less than impressed with these dishes because the judges felt less than impressed with them, or because we really feel less than impressed with them. So it's hard to decipher if the judges' commentary really does influence the viewers. And of course, I mean, of course it does, but like the people that really understand food and can visually imagine what it would taste like, it's a hard scenario for me. Yeah, I mean, I don't love Black Eyed Peas, so I wasn't like super excited about that dish. The steak felt like a little like steak and vegetables that had to be all perfectly executed because it was such a simple dish. But maybe it wasn't such a simple dish, you know, maybe that marrow sauce was really involved and complex and we just didn't hear about it. So I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air about this course.
Yeah, I feel like that's Joe Flam's MO with not only this meal, but his entire sort of style is taking these at the surface simple Italian dishes, but applying his own technical aesthetics to it to make it, you know, something more than ordinary. I mean, back in the first course, again, going back to that Wagyu powder, that's a different way to sort of approach this idea of fat. And I think I forget which one of these dishes that they say like, oh, this is better than the original. So it's interesting that this sort of, again, ties into what Joe is doing, where he's trying to incorporate more of these Colorado flavors into it. But if it doesn't get pulled off well, you know, even if your asparagus is magic, your steak might not be, then it sort of unfortunately helps the favor fall a little bit. But he does better as we approach the dessert course here with the grandma cake, a brown sugar cake with ricotta, blueberry thyme sauce, and chocolate shards. I believe that Graham calls it the Huba Stank of desserts. I'm sure he found the reason to call it that. And Adrian goes for her own yuzu banana pudding with banana spears and vanilla wafers that apparently has its own naming problems. The judges were not, you know, if you had just called it a yuzu meringue pudding, they would have been happy with it. But they were sort of searching for the banana. And that was sort of what docked Adrian there. Haley, what'd you think about these desserts?
I thought Joe's sounded really delicious. The brown sugar cake sounds a little sweet to me, but the whipped ricotta I feel like would balance it out a little bit. For some reason, I just have an issue with deconstructed desserts, and I just want my dish to come constructive. Like, that's what I'm here for. I want you to make my dish for me. Like, I could deconstruct a lot of things on my own. And one of my face washes has yuzu in it, so that's where I go rather than to like the food. So it's just like and it looked like my face wash too. It had that like creamy yellow color, so I was just kind of a little put off by Adrian's dish. But the banana spears look delicious.
I love this idea that you're like, I mean, this looks like face wash.
It did though. I should like send you a picture and you'll be like, okay, yeah, I see where you're coming from, Haley.
Brooke, you are someone who killed with desserts on your seasons. What did you think about these two desserts?
Well, you know, I think killed is an
which
exaggeration.
She was able to show them. Sorry, Brooke.
Well, I don't know. Maybe if I weren't able to serve my flan in the finale of last season, we would have known right off the bat that, that things have gone great. Both of these desserts actually sounded good to me. I love yuzu, and I thought that Adrian's what deconstructed or not deconstructed, I mean, maybe just don't say deconstructed, just call it like a pudding with vanilla wafers. I think that that sounded like it was really on par with her whole theme of her menu, you know, being that sort of Southern with Asian influences, which I think is a really interesting concept and something you don't see very often. You know, yuzu is a Japanese citrus and something, it's a flavor that I absolutely love. And I think it would be a really great way to unexpectedly balance out the flavor of or the sweetness of banana. So that actually sounded really good to me. I mean, again, the judges say that they didn't get enough banana. I don't know. What did they say that they should have, that she should have just called it yuzu pudding?
Yuzu meringue pudding is what they would prefer.
Yuzu meringue pudding. Yeah. I mean, if she had called it a yuzu meringue pudding with like touches of banana, I think that it would have maybe done a completely different thing for her. I think that that's part of the reason I don't name my dishes, one, because I don't think I have naming creativity, and two, because I feel like the food should tell the story by itself. You know, I don't want to tell the story of the food and then have it not make sense. And I feel like that does get people in trouble a lot, is saying one thing and then and presenting another and changing people's expectations. So I think that that dessert would have gone a whole different direction if people weren't expecting banana pudding.
Kaylee, do you think that judges should now call their dishes like Pudding McPudding Face, just to sort of cast a wide net?
Why the heck not, eh?
Yeah, like in the finale with Shirley, she had like a poem for all of her dishes, and like,
here's dessert, you know, just eat it. Like that would be my tactic.
I made pork and beans, here you go, either you like it or you don't, but the dish is what it is. So yeah. And then Joe's dish, I mean, it sounded really simple but flavorful. I think they were actually very opposite desserts, and neither of them sounded bad to me.
Yeah, so. Like, I'm never gonna say no to dessert. Like, never in my life have I ever been like, you know what, I don't feel like dessert, right? I have dessert after breakfast. So I'm like, I'm not scoffing at these two desserts, but it's just a little odd for me, just a scooch on Adrian's part.
I will also say that Fatih had a chance to remake that cake, what, 19 times? Because she had 2 days to remake it.
Is that another, like, construct criticism?
If I only had to make 9 flan and I had 2 days to test it out, it would have been the best fucking flan you've ever had.
To be fair, though, earlier on the season, you did produce like the best dessert that they've ever had with that radish. And I mean, that has been untested. So you've got a good resume behind you.
Yeah, I'm fine with desserts. I've done pastry before. That desserts don't scare me. So and that's unusual. I feel like there are very few savory chefs who have pastry experience.
Yeah, so we get to, after this, the judges are deliberating. Tom calls it one of the closest finishes ever. I mean, it really does seem like they were going back and forth, but I don't know, Haley, maybe this is tying into what we were talking about before. I had thought at the time that Adrian had received overall more positive commentary than Joe, so maybe this, compounded with what Josh had sort of told us last week, had me thinking that she was going to be winning as well.
In the immortal words of Gia Gunn, absolutely. Like, that's definitely how I felt about it.
That's not how I felt about it.
Okay,
ooh,
interesting.
Did you tell?
You mean from this meal alone specifically?
Yeah, from the comments that the judges were making.
I feel like she definitely hands down took that first course, but not because they were unsatisfied with his first course.
Okay.
I feel like he hands down took that second course, but I feel like they did have some negative comments about her second course. And then the third course, I feel like he took the third course, and the fourth course felt kind of tied. So it didn't, I feel like, yes, there were more obvious positive comments on that first course because they did show, was it Gail saying that that was her favorite dish? Or
yeah, I think it was Padma. Yeah, and maybe that's the one that like got stuck in my head, was like, oh, I'm surprised Adrian didn't win because they said this is the best dish they had all season, but it's more of the entire meal than it is just about one dish. And I can see where you're coming from, where especially with that back half, it seemed like Adrian was getting maybe more negative comments than Joe was.
Yeah, and I feel like if you look back at our finale in Mexico, I didn't get any negative commentary on any of my courses except for dessert. I mean, maybe there was a comment about the onions being too acidic or something like that. But then dessert came, and I think it again was Padma who said this was my favorite dish of the whole night. And suddenly my Twitter was like blowing up with, oh, Brooke's screwed. And I was like, really? Because I feel like it didn't really seem that way to me.
Maybe because you already knew you were going to win.
Yeah, maybe.
It's results oriented, yeah.
But I do feel like people get really stuck on those comments where they hear the judges say, this is the best thing I've ever eaten, or this is the best thing I've eaten all season, or this is the best dish of the night. And then people think like, oh, well, this person's won. But that's one course. And I think that you have to take the whole meal into consideration. And he really didn't get any negative commentary on the first course, even though she took it. And the second course, she did. I don't know. Maybe it works differently in my head, but I didn't feel like it was in her favor.
So should we be, Haley, should we be counting out hyperbole from now on with these judges? Because I feel like even back in the second episode with the cheese challenge, Padma said like, oh, Chris and Tanya, your ice cream was some of the best things that I've had on the show, and they didn't win the challenge. So maybe when they say those things, we should necessarily say that that's a guaranteed slam dunk win.
Yeah, after this season of The Bachelor, I don't think I can emotionally take any more hyperbole.
Right? I mean, take it with a grain of salt or sugar or acid or whatever you want to take it with. But did you hear that? You like that?
I love that.
Take it with a grain of sugar? Okay, I was doing
it. I'm putting that in my pocket for later. Maybe a grain of yuzu so Haley can rub that on her face.
Hey, that one's not an exfoliating wash.
I thought Tom had a really interesting sort of poetic quote at the end here as Adrian and Joe stood before him. He said, there's something inside us that makes us want to cook. We have to cook. The better chefs go on a journey and they find themselves, they find their voice. And how he talks about how chefs consistently find themselves sort of restarting different journeys of their lives, and that's just sort of like the mode of work that they're in. Brooke, what do you feel about that statement? Do you agree with it?
I feel like that was the exact same statement that I heard standing in the cenote with Sheldon and Shirley. I feel like he's got this like poetic line of advice or like some perfect caption every season, and I feel like it's just slightly altered every season. So I couldn't get past that. I couldn't get past what, wait, I feel like you said that to us too.
and you already have strikes against Tom this episode, so you're like, I know what you're doing here, Tom.
I love this idea that Tom just went to thesaurus.com and just changed out some words in the speech, and season 16 will be like, as a chef we walk down a path, and that path takes us in many different directions.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I feel like you could probably write that line and send it to him on a direct message, and he'll just put that in his pocket for next year. He's very wise, and I love him to death. And, you know, regardless of whether or not I've heard that line before, it's true. And I feel like that specifically tailored line to them and the journey and all that stuff was very perfect in the moment.
Well, this journey has come to an end as Joe Flam is the winner of Top Chef season 15. You see this the Joe Flam fan club hug as soon as they hear those words. You know, everyone's celebrating. Adrian has a very nice but very tearful confessional about how, you know, she feels happy, but she feels sad at the same time. I love Joe calling his wife, and in true Joe Flam fashion, is ribbing her the entire time. I think it's in the previously on, Padma sort of talks about each chef's journey, and she mentions Joe Flam's wistful wit, which I feel like, Haley, we got here when he sort of trolls his wife on the phone when he calls her and says that he won.
Oh, I didn't see this part. My DVR changed the channel. My parents.
Oh no.
My parents were taping like Young Sheldon and something else stupid, so like I missed the last minute of the season.
There's a really fun thing where so he calls his wife and he says, "Hey, I won Top Chef," and the subtitles do a really fun thing where she says, "Shut up! Oh my god!" and the words like come on the screen one at a time instead of what they usually do, an entire sentence. And then, you know, it was just, I thought it was a really heartwarming moment. Brooke, as someone who was the most recent one to experience this type of thrill before this season. How did it feel watching this moment back?
Which thrill are you talking about? The winning thrill or the losing thrill?
Okay, the winning thrill, I would say. the more recent thrill, the one that had you housing a bottle of tequila back in your hotel room afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I've felt both of those thrills. But the most recent thrill was definitely more satisfying. I mean, you go straight to that interview. He called his wife. I called my son. And it was really exciting to break the news to someone who wasn't there, because my parents were there and my husband was there. But my son was down the street at the not adult only resort. And so he couldn't come to the dinner. And I got to FaceTime with him and tell him, and he was super excited. You know, he had traveled all the way to Mexico to not come to the final dinner. So he was very excited to hear that I had won. And then you go straight from that interview to your room. At least I did.
I haven't talked with Joe Flam yet, but I will be. I mean, I got to talk with the both of them before the finale, and I thought they're both absolutely lovely people. We can sort of use this to segue into our overall talks about the season, but I found this cast to be so much fun to get to talk to. And the two of them in particular had a really nice rapport with each other. They had a lot of humor. You could tell obviously from that with Joe's quips throughout the season, but Adrian is so much fun to talk to as well. So I can only assume what he did after all was said and done. But let's talk about Joe Flam as a winner here. Haley, you know, we're talking about the Top Chef winner as well, but I guess sort of comparing him with the others, how do you think Joe Flam sort of falls in line with that?
Yeah, watch your words.
I was going to say, like, I can't imagine a better winner than Brooke. So, like, really, it's all downhill from here. And, like, no one ever can compare. But, like, I guess he was, like, you know, if I had to take Brooke out of the whole situation to make everything a little bit even so I can, like, grade on a curve. Like, he was really good. I like him a lot. I was just slightly disappointed that Adrian didn't win because, you know, girl power, that's how I roll. Sorry, everyone. But it just, I really like Joe. He seems like a really fun, awesome guy to hang out with. And, you know, I'm really happy for him. And I feel very satisfied with the season as a whole.
Yeah, Brooke, how does it feel to welcome Joe into the winner's circle?
I mean, I think he's a great guy. I only kind of know him through social media and like brief chats with him, but you know, it was funny, he actually tweeted me and after that Nutella quick fire and apologized for his terrible dish and said please come to my restaurant so I can apologize and make you dinner. And I was like, damn, yeah, be right there. I think he's an awesome guy. He seems very witty, he seems deserving, he seems you know, he seems like somebody that I can't wait to do events with. So yeah, I'm really happy. Of course, Adrian seemed super cool and super talented too. She does seem like she has a really bright future ahead of her. Yeah. I feel like maybe Joe was a little bit further in his career. I don't know why. I feel like Joe felt a little bit more seasoned to me than Adrian. Like Adrian was kind of just finding
her
style.
Well, Adrian always had a problem with seasoning at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, she really is under seasoned in general.
But so I don't know. This kind of felt like it made sense to me in that respect. But I would have been totally happy with Adrian winning too, and I could say that about a handful of people from this season. Of course, like Fatima, but pretty much just because I think she's hysterical. I have no qualms about the results.
Or Kwame's.
Or Kwame's. yeah, speaking of another person, remember when Kwame was on this season? That was
yeah.
Crazy.
You remember that?
I think you bring up a good point, though, Brooke, because it's interesting sort of when these two chefs earlier on in the episode discuss like what they want to do. Adrian's talking about starting up her first restaurant, where Joe, who's already EC of a place, is like, I want to move on and do something on my own. So while they're both sort of in interesting juncture points of their careers. It does seem like when it comes to like the restaurant game, Adrienne's been doing, worked with a lot of fantastic between Le Bernardin and Red Rooster. You know, she's worked with a lot of prestigious institutions, but Joe is someone who might be a little further along in terms of the management aspect. So it's interesting to sort of see their places in their careers. And you could feel like Adrienne, she didn't win, but she sort of won in a way where like she got to discover who she was and what she wanted to make. And, you know, Tom says earlier on in the episode, like, I don't think you're going to have much of a problem getting backers now that you're on the show. And I really do hope that, because I do wish her nothing but the best. It's interesting. Again, we talked about this last week, looking at these two, how I would say even a few weeks ago, I would not have expected these two would be the top two, just because, as you just mentioned, Brooke, there really was a pretty wide open field, you know, since Claudette left, of any of those final seven I could see going all the way, just because they come from such a diverse background, and there was a lot of wins and there was a lot of losses on all of their respective parts. But Joe's somebody who maybe didn't have the strongest story the entire time, but as we spoke about that before, that's not necessarily indicative of his techniques. It really seems like he was pretty darn solid throughout. He had two major stumbling points between the family challenge, where he had to try to make grandma's recipe and Tom threw grandma under the bus, and then when he ultimately went down in the sudden death quickfire. But other than that, he's been like very consistent throughout. He really praises this idea of simplicity and you know, really working on the technical aspects of it. So I mean, and he's also, you know, funny as crap as well. So I really can't malign him too much. So it was interesting to sort of see him and Adrienne specifically sort of like flare up at the end almost, whereas I feel like in the middle of the season both of them were like they were doing pretty well, but they were like under the radar in terms of there was all this other stuff going on with all these other characters, that to see the two of them at the end was interesting. But I sufficiently enjoyed this finale and watching these two sort of come out of the woodwork and cook for us.
Yeah, I mean, female empowerment excitement aside, I actually, until two episodes ago, thought that it was the two Joes in the finale. And I was in Aspen, so I actually thought that Adrienne went home for that corn pudding and found out very recently that she didn't. So I was very excited about that, to see her in the finale. I thought that, you know, my initial thought from tasting the food at that cowboy cauldron challenge, was that Joe Sasto was going to go home. And then I heard that he didn't. So I was mistaken and pleased that I was mistaken, because I was really excited to see Adrienne in the finale. I don't remember my point, but
you got the wrong information. So that's surprising.
I got the wrong information, and I've never been like so excited to be wrong, because I mean, not that I wanted Joe Sasso to go home. Like, Joe Sasso is, he actually came to my restaurant to watch the premiere of the show.
Oh.
When the season first started, I got to chat with him. I've chatted with him a few times since. Actually, he messaged me when he was about to go bartend on Watch What Happens Live and said, "What am I supposed to do as a bartender?" And I was like, just stand there and look pretty. He was like, "Oh, I can do that. Cool." But he's a very funny, very talented, very charming guy. And I would have been totally happy to see him in the finale, but I was really excited to get to see Adrienne's food. And that it wasn't all Italian food in the finale.
Yes, that would have been, I mean, yeah, Scenes from an Italian Restaurant, which should have been the name of the finale in that case. Let's close out the season a bit. Haley, we've been through 14 episodes of Top Chef Colorado together. Looking back on it, what did you think about the season and how it might compare to some of the other recent seasons?
I, especially since I've watched all of the recent seasons, like, fairly recently, I really liked the season in the way that all of the cast seems so close, and I like that there wasn't really a lot of drama. From a food standpoint, I would say that this probably wasn't the most exciting food season I've seen in a while. I would have said last season was more exciting from that standpoint. And what was before that? California?
California.
I thought California was really interesting. I loved Boston. I feel like we're in a really great run of Top Chef. So I absolutely enjoyed this season. And if we have more like these, then I will be happy as a clam.
Brooke, this is your first season after winning. How did you feel looking back on it, getting to see it all unfold?
I think it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun watching. And I would have to blame you guys for most of that, because I feel like I don't generally want to watch the show. Not because it's a show that I feel like I wouldn't want to watch, but just because it just puts me in a really analytical place in my head. And that's not how I want to watch reality TV. I really just want to watch The Bachelor and laugh and be amused and not have to use any intellectual piece of my brain when watching reality TV. But this puts me in a place where like I end up thinking, and I actually found that to be really, really fun and inspiring and cool. Looking at these dishes, saying to myself like, wow, how interesting that they thought of this. And then it kind of brings me back to thinking of like, how did I do a lot of the stuff that I did? Like, how did I think of that? And I think that these chefs are put in a place in their heads where the only thing that matters is making really great food, and they're able to just be creative and not think about the rest of their lives. And I'm jealous of that. I feel like my brain was really tested in a creative way when I was on the show, and that it doesn't get a chance to be in everyday life. So it's really fun to sort of watch and be inspired by watching the show, which I don't always do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never been happier to be blamed for something, so thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, this, I agree with Haley in particular. This cast, I feel like, was fantastic. And, you know, they might have made mistakes along the way. And yes, maybe it, with the exception of this final, apparently, as Brooke alluding to, there might be a bit of a handicap there. You know,
the best food that's ever happened on any finale of anything ever. So
of anything ever in the whole universe.
Yeah, anything ever.
Until next season.
When they have to cook for three people.
So
and they have 7 days to
Jesus,
prepare.
Right? Like, might as well just cook a romantic dinner for two and give them a week. Sounds great.
But I thought this was a really fun group of people. I do agree that I don't necessarily need this type of drama in my Top Chef season, especially when we got those two kind of ugly episodes with Tanya versus Claudette and then sort of Claudette versus her team, where it wasn't exactly exciting stuff to watch. I feel like I just love watching these personalities interact with each other. We talked about this before. I loved watching a lot of these chefs grow. Seeing someone like Carrie, who came in as a hometown chef who really didn't feel like she fit in, to becoming one of the front runners, if not the front runner to win before she got eliminated, was so much fun. You have Chris, you have Fatima, you have Joe Stash, you have Bruce, you even have early people like Tyler and Laura in there. It was just a fantastic cast, and I do agree that it honestly has felt like since around season 10, the casting in particular has been fantastic. The challenges were pretty good. I think when Antonio was on here a few weeks ago, we talked about how there weren't a lot of like memorable Colorado-esque challenges. That might have changed in the past few weeks when we had, you know, the Rocky Mountain Oysters Challenge. We had the catch your own fish and have Chris Cosentino, you know, nearly throw up at the idea of eating a raw river trout challenge.
I actually saw Chris Cosentino like 20 minutes after he shot that. We flew in on the same plane. We were staying a couple of rooms down from we hung out a lot in Aspen, and I saw him right after he shot that, and he was like, oh my god, Brooke, you'll never believe this, they tried to serve me raw trout. And I was like, what? So that was really fun to see. he was like, she could have made me sick. You can't eat that shit. You can't eat raw trout. And I was like, okay,
literally,
right?
You cannot eat that shit.
Yeah, because it is made out of shit at that point. Yeah, I thought so. Overall, I really enjoyed getting to cover this season. I also might be a little, biased because this is the first season that I got to do exit press. So I got to speak a lot more with the chefs themselves, who it just turned out that they're also really great people. So I really enjoyed this season overall. I do feel like Top Chef is continuing to be on a roll, and I cannot wait to see what next season is going to bring. Brooke, do you have any thoughts about the idea of Top Chef going to Kentucky next?
I love it. I love Kentucky. I've been saying for years, since I do this event called Taste of the Derby during Derby Week, and it's like one of the opening events for the Derby. And so I've done it for 3 years now, I think. And I have been saying since the first time I went that Louisville is literally like one of those cities that I feel like is just a hidden gem in the culinary world. I feel like not only is there amazing bourbon there, of course, but the food is just really phenomenal what people are doing. I mean, Edley's there, my girl Annie Petrie's there. Mm. Petrie, I'm sorry, Annie, I don't know if it's Petrie or Petrie. I think it's Petrie.
Either way, you can really dish out about how much you love her. Get it?
I love
Petrie did.
Put that in your pocket, Brooke. Wow.
I'm taking that home. I'm already home, but anyway, I feel like there's a lot to see. It's a small, I feel like Kentucky is small, but there's a lot of history there. So I feel like there's plenty to use for an entire season of Top Chef. So I'm excited to see that.
And we will be excited to cover it. I'm assuming Top Chef will come back, what, Haley, end of 2018, like it always does?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it'll be a good way to sort of spend the holidays once more. It's sad that we won't have Top Chef until then. Though I know, Haley, Top Chef Canada is starting up soon, right?
Yeah, I think it's April or May, and I'll definitely be checking that out.
That's a thing?
Or checking it out, I guess.
Yeah, I guess if I have time, and that's just always a big if in my life, I would love to check it out because I've heard really interesting things. And I know that they just had an all-star season, right?
They did. I did not watch it. Sorry, Canada.
Well, you have time to check it out now, but Brooke, thank you so much for coming back to gab about the finale with us and compare them to your experiences for better and for worse.
Sorry if I made it all about me, guys. I apologize.
I mean, considering that you've been to two finales, like, we wanted to bring you on to have it be all about you. So you were fantastic as per usual. Thank you so much for coming on. For people out there who might want to talk to you a little bit more, how can people find you on social media? And do you have any sort of events coming up?
Well, people can find me at Chef W. I'm overly active on Instagram. And overly active. Like, I really enjoy it, but maybe
great Instagram follow, really up on all the stories, you know, the usual.
Appreciate it. Thanks. I show a lot of my life, and I'm definitely the only one handling my social media. So follow me at Chef Brooke W. I have lots of stuff coming up. I'm doing the Taste Washington at the end of the month. I will be at, I don't know, a slew of other things next month. But yeah, follow my Instagram because I'll tell you all about it. I'll be at Coachella. I'm doing a dinner called Outstanding in the Field at Coachella with Shirley Chung. Nice. And lots of stuff. So yeah, follow me, find out. And I just want you guys to know that you are very well respected in the Top Chef community as podcasters. I will say I was chatting with one of the executive producers a couple weeks ago, telling her that I was going to do a podcast before I did the last one. And she said, oh, that one, that's the only one we all listen to. It's it's the best one for sure. And there are a few Top Chef podcasts. So great job, you guys. And I'm honored to have been a part of it.
I'm going to cry.
we have our own little emotional moments in the course of this finale podcast. No, thank you. Thank you, Brooke. That is very kind. And thank you to all of you guys.
Was that a scheduled cry? Is that what that was?
This is a purely unscheduled cry, and I love you for that callback.
No, this is my week of scheduled crying.
Well, Haley, speaking of which, you've had quite a week of reality TV coverage. How can people follow you on social media, and what other megalith events have you covered the past week?
Just this little thing called the Bachelor finale. We're done with that. The finale podcast is out for you to listen to. As soon as we wrap this up, I'm on podcast hiatus until May, and I'm really excited for my vacation. So until you can hear my voice again, you can always find me on Twitter at @hstrong_. My Instagram handle is exactly the same. I, like Brooke, am very active on Instagram. I've really been loving Instagram stories lately. So if you want to, you know, check out my day-to-day boring life, I rarely leave the same pair of sweatpants because I don't leave my house very often. But if that's something you're into, follow me that there at @hstrong_.
And you can always follow me at @amikebloomtide. You can check out all the exit interviews I've done all season for Top Chef. I recently talked with Joe Sasto, and I did a sit down with both Adrian and Joe at the same time. Got some really interesting insights out of all three of them, so be sure to check that out. I also am doing exit interviews for Survivor as well. I'm doing coverage of RuPaul's Drag Race, which will be going on until the end of time, apparently. I'm covering SNL. Might get a little bit of American Idol coverage in here as well with my lovely wife, so we'll see what might be happening with that. But yeah, be sure to check out all the stuff that we are all doing. A big, big thanks to everyone who has been listening all season long. You know, we had a little bit of change in the lineup, but, you know, I'm so happy for the listeners that never missed a step and got to listen and give their thoughts and correct me several times when I got Colorado geography wrong. I really am appreciative of each and every person that listens. Top Chef is one of my absolute favorite shows to watch and talk about, and I'm so happy that we have other people and other contestants to talk with them about. Special thanks to everyone who came on, Brooke included, including Jim Smith, Antonio Mazzaro, AJ Mass, Josh Wiggler, Emily Fox, the aforementioned Rourke Luskin. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for making sure all these things get edited and put up.
And Kurt Clark.
Oh my God. Yes, Kurt Clark, who was on for the first half of the season. We miss you, buddy, but congrats on your second draft win in a row for picking Joe Flam. In absentia, the trophy's in the mail. But Haley, thank you so much for, you know, we brought you onto the panel this season. I had so much fun getting to talk with you week in and week out. You're an absolute delight.
Stop. I've really loved being a part of this podcast this season. The only disappointing part is that I don't get to listen to it because it was one of my favorite podcasts to listen to before I came onto it. But I don't.
Why can't you listen to it?
I already know what I said, kind of. So.
Yeah, I hate the sound of my voice, so that's why I won't listen to the ones that I've done. I feel like I've already heard it, so.
Well, you both have lovely voices, for what it's worth. To finish things off, we need a hashtag. I have a couple in mind. I have a hashtag thank you, Danny Meyer. I have hashtag top helicopter. any stick out to you two?
There was one, but I can't remember it, and I was like, oh, Mike's going to write that down, and you didn't, so I can't remember what it was.
Was it like Tom's harem? Is that what it was?
Might have been that. Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
All right. Let's go with Tom's harem. Maybe those that are in Tom's harem can speak out about it. Because, yeah, maybe this is sort of like an under the radar thing that I was not cognizant of, at least. Maybe I need to put on my own.
Under the radar. No. And I think Tom would be very excited, and he's super active on Twitter. So I feel like he'd be very flattered.
You just might need to put on some glasses to read his Twitter before he does it. Well, thank you both so, so much for coming on. Brooke, thank you so much for coming back. Haley, thanks for being on all season long. Thank you all for being on all season long. We'll be back, assumingly, at the end of 2018 to talk about Top Chef 16. Wow, as we move to Crazy. Kentucky. Insane. Sweet 16, hopefully. Take that grain of sugar and apply it to Top Chef 16. But thank you all so, so much for listening. You may, for the last time this season, pack your knives and go.